This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
True North stores have Primo Eats and Pepsi brand products that are heavy on taste and light on your wallet. Right now, buy any Primo sandwich and add a 20-ounce Pepsi brand beverage for just $1. Handmade every day, Primo uses quality meats and cheeses. Complete the meal with a Pepsi. Grab any Primo sandwich and pair it with a 20-ounce Pepsi brand beverage for just $1. Get more with the True Rewards mobile app. Available in your app store. True North convenience stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
I'm Rhett.
And I'm Link.
And we're the hosts of the podcast Ear Biscuits. We're just two lifelong friends who've been talking about life for a long time.
From being dads to businessmen to all the random things we experience, nothing is off limits.
And now we're talking to you. We're answering your questions, giving advice that you may or may not want to take, and listening to your hilarious stories.
So leave us a voicemail to be part of the show at
1-888-EARPOD1 on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Coming up a bit later, Nick Dowd from the Washington Capitals will join us, and Dan Colco will join us in studio. It is Nationals opening day, so lots to look forward to. Time to head out to the Rude Guest Hotline. Rude, the most reliable heating and air conditioning products in the DMV. Thanks to our next guest for popping on, basically unscheduled.
Short notice.
John Rothstein, College Hoops Insider for CBS Sports, content creator, host of the College Hoops Today podcast for Compass Media. John, thanks for joining us, man, on short notice. We appreciate that.
No problem, fellas. Happy Thursday to all of you.
Happy Thursday. Yeah. Happy Sweet 16 day. So how did we get to this point where there's so much upheaval in College Park, as you've dubbed it, the spring break capital of the Northeast, with Kevin Willard, you know, airing the dirty laundry before the Grand Canyon game, and then he came on the Team 980 AM here, and he was joined by Kevin Sheehan. He basically said, as of right now, I'm staying at Maryland, and then yesterday during his press conference, he was asked a question about his future and the NIL revenue sharing and how things are going with Mike Locksley at College Park. He completely ignored the question. Like, how have we gotten here? The game has been completely overshadowed by the Kevin Willard drama.
Yeah, I mean, Maryland's in the Sweet 16 for the first time in 9 years, and it feels like literally the game tonight against Florida is a backdrop to everything that's going on this week. And that's unfortunate for fans of Maryland basketball, but it's the utmost truth, because Kevin Willard now is in a position where he has a lot of leverage. He was offered on Selection Sunday an opportunity to remain at the University of Maryland and become one of the top 10 highest paid coaches in the sport. But as we know, there is one major power conference opening left in the college basketball coaching carousel. That is Villanova, and Villanova is waiting on a yes or a no from Kevin Willard before they decide to move forward in a different direction.
So do you know anything about the Villanova offer? Did they make an official offer to Willard?
You know, this is what I know, guys, and this is what I can tell you. Villanova has been very judicious in its search, and Villanova, if it wanted to have hired another potential head coach that they've talked to, they would have hired another coach.
Right.
I know for a fact that Villanova has had contact with several people since it parted ways with Kyle Neptune that are no longer coaching in the NCAA tournament. One of them was Richard Pitino, who took the Xavier job the other night because he had an opportunity to obviously get a Big East job and didn't want to wait to see what happened with Villanova because he had the opportunity to be the head coach at Xavier. So when you're looking at things right now from 30,000 feet, it's pretty clear Villanova is waiting on Kevin Willard before it moves forward in its search in a different direction.
So if Willard departs, let's just run this hypothetical. He leaves for Villanova. He leaves for a place that's not going to give as much money to the football program because they have a subdivision team. He just thinks the grass is greener there. What happens to Maryland? Who fills the void at Maryland? Because as you're mentioning, these other coaches are filling in the openings, like Pitino at Xavier, and Sean Miller goes to Texas. So, like, Where would the Terps turn if Willard up and bolts for Philadelphia?
And who makes the decision?
Villanova?
Since they don't have an acting athletic director, who makes that decision?
These are all things which I think, you know, over the next week could cause the sales at Bentley's to be through the roof. Because Maryland fans are going to have to drown their sorrows. And this is the peculiar thing, guys. Maryland has the opportunity and the personnel to still win multiple games in this NCAA tournament and get to a Final Four. This is all on the table for Maryland, but again, the game and the team, which has been obviously really, really strong over the last month of the season, is all a backdrop right now to what's going on with the head coach.
John, if he does go to Villanova, why isn't it okay just to make it public or make it known? The players don't care. I mean, the players in McNeese aren't stupid. They knew Will Wade was leaving. The players at VCU, they're not stupid. They knew Odom was leaving. The players at Colorado State knew Medved was leaving. You still want to go out and win games, but if he's going to take the Villanova job, just put it all to rest. Okay, I'm going to Villanova. Let's just go out and win a national championship.
Yeah, I can't speak for Kevin Willard, but it's really, really clear this. Kevin Willard has all the leverage in the situation. Kevin Willard is obviously, you know, you can't change people when they get to a certain age. People are who they are. He is going to let this thing play out as it's played out this week, which has become, I think, one of the stories of the Sweet 16, which is unfortunate for Maryland fans. But the guy holds all the power right now because Maryland, again, in Kevin Willard's defense, does not have an athletic director. Maryland also wants to have an infrastructure in place at Maryland. So if he stays, he feels like he has the bells and whistles needed to make Maryland again the program that he hopes it can be. And now we have a situation where, you know, again, this is all lingering.
Mm-hmm.
John, you're a Philly guy, I believe. Tell us what Villanova is like.
He's New York.
Oh, you're a New York guy. Yeah. Okay. What is the lore of Villanova versus a program like Maryland in the Big Ten?
I mean, I think the allure of Villanova is this, you know, the resources that Villanova has as the college basketball landscape has shifted is going to be, you know, immense in terms of what they can invest in the program, the way they're going to travel, the way that they're going to have resources for NIL. Obviously, with revenue sharing coming to the forefront, they're going to have a tremendous amount of resources to build a team. Kevin Willard also has tremendous familiarity with the Big East, with being at a basketball-centric school, and compared to his last Big East job, Villanova is a major, major step up to the resources and the infrastructure that he had when he was at Seton Hall.
John, the portal has been open for 4 days. And, you know, that's a lot of people question why the portal is open during the NCAA tournament. I kind of understand it with so many players. You kind of have to spread it out. But The question is, with the portal open, who's making decisions at Villanova now with no head coach? And then who's making the decisions at Maryland if we don't know if Willard's going to be back? So who's being targeted at both schools?
Well, Maryland right now, again, is in a holding pattern because they're still playing. And as I said, they can win a couple of games and get to a Final Four. As far as Villanova goes, Villanova is playing in the college basketball crown next week, Interim head coach Mike Nardi is going to coach them in that event. And then, you know, Villanova is going to be a holding pattern until it hires a new head coach. And Maryland is going to be a holding pattern if, you know, Kevin Willard leaves to take the Villanova job.
This is crazy.
We're joined by John Rothstein, College Hoops insider for CBS Sports. You just tweeted this 5 minutes ago that the transfer portal opening in the middle of the NCAA tournament is terrible for college basketball. I agree. Why can't they just wait until the day after the tournament ends? Why can't they just shift the calendar?
I agree wholeheartedly. Yep. I think the Tuesday after the Final Four, after the national championship game, would be ideal. If it started next Monday after the Elite Eight, I could deal with it. But guys, we are constantly working all year long. And I know for me personally, somebody who goes to practices in the summer and obviously does content all year long, you're working for the NCAA tournament because it's the greatest event that we have in sports. And now this portal, while it's obviously become a necessary evil for teams to, you know, build their program and things like that, and I understand that, I embrace that, but it's overshadowing the sport's greatest event. Yeah. This is cannibalization, like at a Silence of the Lambs caliber level.
Yeah.
So let's
I mean, the college football portal opens early December when teams are prepping for conference championships.
Yep.
I mean, it's nuts. All right, let me ask you this. Let's just say Willard does move to Villanova. All right. Give me a couple names that
you can't. Yeah, you can't do. You can't. There's no surefire guy right now. Right. I mean, you know, Maryland is still an attractive job. I think they could get a sitting power conference head coach. I think somebody like Tony Skin down the road, who I reported last week that has finalized an extension to stay at George Mason, could be an attractive. But there is no person out there, you know, that you look at, you know, and say like this guy is, you know, a lock to be. It right. makes a lot of sense. There's no candidate that you look at and say that's the guy.
Can I throw a name out?
Sure.
Mike Bray.
I hear that. I think that makes a lot of sense from a Ties perspective, but you know, is Maryland going to hire somebody, you know, who has been out of college basketball, this landscape? Does Mike want to do this at 66? Yeah. I don't know.
Well, you know, he was very interested in the job before they hired Turgeon. And I'm not saying that they're going to target him.
That was 15 years ago.
Yeah, I get it.
Hey, John, let me ask you this. We've talked about the leverage that Willard has. He's got the hammer. But my question is, why is he so coveted? You look at his career, 18 years. This is his first Sweet 16. Look, I know he was at Iona. He was at Seton Hall, which is not a powerhouse. But is he just coveted because there aren't that many guys left standing at this point? Like, why is he such a valuable commodity, in your opinion? Or in Villanova's opinion?
Kevin's a really, really good coach, guys. And I know that, you know, sometimes I think the NCAA tournament success, you know, gets in the way of that. I understand that. Mm-hmm. But Kevin has, you know, familiarity with Villanova from his days in the Big East. He once beat Villanova in the Big East tournament title game in 2016. Kevin's a really, really good coach, as he's showing this year, you know, at Maryland. But, you know, also, you know, Villanova moving forward now for the first time in 55 years to somebody outside of the Villanova family for their head coaching spot, they're going to want somebody of a certain ilk. And Kevin Willard has the pedigree and obviously, you know, the resume of somebody who has great familiarity and success in the Big East. And I could see why that would be attractive to Villanova.
Hey, John, we know you're super busy. We appreciate you hopping on with us last minute. Thanks so much for the time, man. We'll have you on again soon.
Thank you, John. Appreciate it, buddy.
Thanks, guys. Enjoy the game.
Yep, we'll try. Man. It's John Rothstein, at John Rothstein. No H in it in his name. He's a College Hoops insider for CBS Sports. He was nice enough to take some time out of his very busy schedule to join us.
In terms of his coaching chops, I read one article where he's been named Coach of the Year 7 times. Mm-hmm. Now, this is different spots, different levels. I think people think he's a good coach. I do wonder, you know, his answer. Maybe we can play this early. We played it very much at the top of the show. His non-answer to the question was pretty telling about a guy he just doesn't want to deal with anymore, but he kind of opened the door to all this stuff.
Yeah, then
he opened the door a week ago by airing all the dirty laundry and saying Damon Evans is leaving.
Mm-hmm.
And I wasn't happy with not being able to stay at a hotel an extra night and all that stuff. So he started there.
Yeah.
And the stories continued and lingered as the team won and advanced to Sweet 16. And then this is how he answered a question yesterday.
Very open the last week about, you know, trying to get greater NIL share, revenue share. I'm sure you saw Mike Loxley yesterday said he would prefer to keep some of these issues in-house. Why have you felt like kind of bringing this discussion in the open has been the best way to advocate for your program?
Well, I mean, I'll be honest. I think our biggest thing is we got to stop Clayton. He's really good. He shoots the basketball going left 48%. He shoots it right going at like 38%. So really the last couple days, trying to come up with a game plan to stop, you know, Clayton, because I just think he's one of the best guards in the country that we've seen. And then really, you know, obviously trying to fix our rebounding woes have been at the top of my mind too. So yeah, it's a big problem.
I don't laugh a lot, and I don't smile a lot. That makes me smile.
It makes you slap your knee.
That answer does. Yes.
Yeah. All right.
So but you know, he did come out and say, and then Loxley criticized the whole situation, and I don't know, maybe his agent got to him, or maybe the Villanova people got to him. Maybe the president of Maryland got to him and said, we can't talk about this anymore publicly. And that's how he reacted.
All right, you're welcome to call us throughout an open line Thursday, brought to you by Window Nation. Searching for new windows and doors, search windownation.com. Their windows are measured to fit the first time, installed by experts to last. Window Nation for your home, because it's where you live. 800-636-1067 is the number. You can chime in on the latest Kevin Willard drama. The Terps are in the Sweet 16 tonight against Florida. It's Nationals opening day. There's a ton going on. When we come back, we'll be joined by Nick Dowd from the Washington Capitals. That's coming up at 8:25.
Ben Standing's with us every Monday, even when there's not a lot of news to discuss. But Ben's a big college basketball guy, more of an NBA guy. What did you think of Maryland's win?
I mean, you know, that's the shot. I mean, you know, that's the stuff that gets played over and over again for the rest of time. And you know, the fact it would have been great, obviously, if it was any player that made that shot, but the fact that it was the kid who is being projected as like a top 10 pick, who has this type of, you know, potential around him that, you know, seems pretty significant. It just, you know, kind of makes it, it's like, even if it's only here for in Maryland for 1 year, that is, you know, a tremendous legacy just off of that one shot. And obviously there's still potentially more to go. So, yeah, I mean, overall though, I mean, that kid on Colorado State, what, Clifford, that guy was, fantastic. And, you know, I mean, I don't know if it's right to say Maryland was fortunate to win, but, you know, Colorado State was probably, you know, unfortunate to lose.
Yeah. And I talked a lot about in the open of the show just how, you know, it was so incredibly exciting in the moment. And at the same time, if you've been a lifelong Maryland fan like I have been, and you've been more of a Georgetown guy, I think, over the course of your life, the number of times that that's gone the other way, I mean, it's 4-1 in terms of the count of devastating, soul-crushing losses to euphoric wins. And so to see it go down and to see them move on, it was just really, really good, because that's a dagger three on the other end. You're up two. You can't give up a three. You certainly can't give up a three to their best three-point shooter, or one of their best three-point shooters. And it just felt in the moment so Maryland, you know, that they were going to go down again, not just because of this year, Ben. You've got enough of a historic knowledge of this town and of the teams in it. I mean, just because they've lost four times this year, basically at the buzzer in the final 5 seconds, that just would have been a ghastly way for the season to end. But it would have been so Maryland.
Yeah, I mean, look, it was always an inferiority complex, whatever, in the ACC days of Duke and Carolina, which was, you know, which made the, you know, getting to the back-to-back Final Fours and being Duke's rival for those couple of years, you know, all the better. And for the record, like, I've been a Maryland fan since the Buck Williams, Albert King days.
Oh, okay.
It's just because I covered, I grew up here. I didn't know you couldn't like them both. And then professionally, I covered Georgetown more just because that's the way things worked out. So I get more linked to that. But yeah, no, I mean, I was at the Final Four, the one they lost to
Duke.
To Duke. But yeah, no, I mean, that, you know, and look, I think also the fact that Kevin Willard had a very interesting week, to say the least. And for him to have been talking the way he was talking, you know, it was good that for him that they were able to pull that one out, and not, you know, getting bounced out of the tournament before the Sweet 16 after sort of, like I said, a very interesting week. I don't know what would have happened there, but it definitely does not hurt his stock, whatever that means going forward.
Yeah, it's one of those weird situations where I think people in the know understood what he was doing and were applauding it and want the change and have wanted the change for many, many years. But for the mass majority of people on the outside just paying attention, he needed to win those two games. I mean, that would have been, had they gone down on a three where they had an opportunity to use a foul and didn't use it, that would have really been ugly. I think he's staying. I think I've already said that on the show today, Denton. I think he's staying. I don't know anything for sure. I think some of the things that I've heard would give me a lean that he's staying. Part of that may just be he may not be Villanova's number one. You know, I think the key though is they've got to get basketball at a priority level that most of the fans and alums believe it should be at in terms of the way they operate. So hopefully he'll end up getting it. But terrific game, and yeah, how far can they go?
Well, can I just say, like, you know, independent of Willard's future and all that, but, you know, some of the things he was saying about, like, he couldn't get the extra night in New York and whatever. Like, look, I don't think anybody liked the fact that Maryland left the ACC at the time specifically because they needed the money, right? I mean, that was, like, the driving factor. And, unfortunately, it also did work out in terms of how college basketball has broken apart and they're in one of the main conferences now. But it's, if you're going to have done that, Maryland, where's the money? Like, you know, they don't have the I know they're working towards a practice facility, but it took that long for that to happen. And, you know, I don't know exactly what the NIL deal is. Obviously, they got Derek Queen, but, like, where's the money? Like, this should not be happening. I mean, not only, you know, you're in the Big Ten, but that was the reason you left. Fix this problem. It's not, it's been a decade now or whatever, right? I mean, whatever it's been.
Yeah, I mean, there's so much in play here. Number one is the money comes from football. You know, so you start there. So the rev share of the $20 million or whatever the cut is from the Big Ten, you know, has to go primarily to football. Secondly, your football program can't draw flies. Even when Mike's got three straight seasons of 8 wins and 3 bowl wins, literally the place is empty on a lot of Saturday afternoons when they play. Also, throw into that the interest in Maryland basketball. You know this market. You have lived it like I have. There was a time in which Maryland was a very difficult ticket to get. You know, it was probably the toughest ticket in town after, you know, Skins tickets or maybe Caps playoff tickets, but it's not that anymore. It hasn't been that for a while, really, since moving into the Big Ten, and there's a lot of, you know, complexity around that conversation. But to your point, they took the money, but when they went to the Big Ten, so hey, our basketball team should be able to stay in New York an extra night, especially since most of our fans care about basketball a lot more than they care about football.
100%. I mean, the football team, you know, not to go all the way back into history, but like when they took Randy Edsall over Mike Leach, that was like one of those moments like, no, this football team is not interesting enough to the Mets, to the locals. You need to give them extra. You have to give them a reason. So like somebody is there that gets put on the 6 o'clock news shows, or you know, people in your job, you know, are talking about Maryland in other ways because this coach said stuff that, you know, that needs to happen for that program as much as anybody. But yes, I mean, college basketball, as we all know, has taken a hit. And in this market, I think what the difference is that the people who were like a little more, you know, people who didn't go to Maryland, people who have not been College Park lifers, like they've kind of just faded off because I think the sport has, you know, just not been as interesting. And that's what's missing. And, you know, that's a whole other topic as to what college basketball does, or, you know, but yeah, no, it's definitely frustrating. I mean, you know, I'm mostly emotionally, agnostic these days when it comes to rooting for any of the teams just because of my job and I've beaten it out of me. But like, I know so many of my friends and like you who are just like, you know, they're thrilled with this Sweet 16, but it overall remain incredibly frustrated with how the basketball program gets dealt with.
I had a friend text me this morning and he just said, God, man, you're so excited about the Sweet 16. my God, have times changed. And it's true. It's not that I'm thrilled to be there and anything else that happens is icing on the cake. I'm not there. I think Maryland can make a run, and I want them to beat Florida and go win the national championship. But there was a stretch of you know, a decade and a half, you know, plus really, where the expectation was the Sweet 16 every year. And you were more about, you know, do we have enough to make a legitimate Final Four run this year? Not that they went to a lot of Final Fours, but they had Final Four caliber teams regularly. Remember, Gary was criticized before he finally made a Final Four because people thought that Sweet 16 was the max you could do with Gary Williams as head coach. He went to like six of them without advancing to an Elite Eight or five of them before he finally did. And then, you know, they had a chance certainly in 2001 with a 22-point lead against Duke, and then they came back and won it the next year. But, that's the current reality. The current reality is Maryland's gotten to a point where getting to a Sweet 16 is, I called it a bit of a relief because there is a sense of relief to get out of this weekend because they've had a lot of opportunities. It's not like they haven't been in the tournament. It's not like they haven't had wins in the tournament. I think they had like 9 second round losses to go with the one second round win in 2016. And some of those losses were excruciating. Corey Lucius, Tremaine Waters. The reality is, when you've only been to now, you know, to one Sweet 16 over a 21-year period before yesterday, your thinking starts to change. So there is excitement to be in the Sweet 16. But I want to go further.
And in this era of college basketball, forget the fact that Derrick Queen seems likely to be a one-and-done, you know, top-10 pick, lottery pick, whatever it may be. College basketball in general is a total mess with the transfer portal. So whatever this thing is may be completely different by next year. So exactly. Every year now is just – it's not that you don't want to win every year, but, like, back in the day, you knew that Steve Blake would be there for 4 years or Drew Nicholas, or you had time to build your team. That's gone. So when you have this team that looks to be as good as Maryland, at least with the starting five, you need to take advantage of that because by next year it could be completely different. And that's, again, one of the unfortunate parts of the sport right now. But, you know, in particular, when you have a guy like Queen, and again, go back to that shot, I mean, that's what makes that shot even more, I think, fascinating and you know, is who made it. And, you know, you don't get many guys like that. And fortunately, theirs is panning out for sure.
Yeah, and I think that's part of what you heard from Willard, too, the understanding that this isn't about a slow build. This is about, you know, an annual, you know, totally restructuring of your team. And if you don't have the resources to do it the right way, you're at a disadvantage. And he hit the inside straight. You know, he kept Queen for less money than other schools were offering. And you know, he got just enough to get the right mix of players with Miguel Gillespie and Rice. Not to mention, he had a four-year senior center who had opportunities to take more money and go elsewhere last year. So can't count on that every year. You didn't answer the question. How far can they go?
Oh, how far can they go? Well, I mean, obviously, you know, their side of the bracket is in form. So Florida, look, I haven't watched Florida enough to know exactly, but, you know, they clearly have been one of the better teams this year. The SEC, pretty crazy. So, you know, I'd leave it up to you to say their chances. What did I see? They're like a 6-point dog. You know, look, I mean, if they're making the shots, you know, obviously for them to make the shots, it sets up the pressure, and that lets them dictate the terms. They're not making shots. I mean, obviously, you know, you got to put points up to win, but if you're not making shots and they're not dictating the terms, then that gets to be a lot more complicated. So, you know, again, Florida's really good, but Maryland has those top five guys are pretty special themselves. So, you know, you would think obviously Florida is the favorite to win. So, you know, odds are they probably would, but, you know, in college basketball, it's hardly, you know, this is not the back of the day where one or two teams are just so much better than everybody else. So, I think they definitely got a puncher's chance, no doubt.
By the way, if UConn had won Denton and Ben, 30 years later to basically the weekend, Maryland and UConn would have met in the Sweet 16 in the Bay Area. 1995, it was Joe Smith's second year. Maryland played UConn in a Sweet 16 game in Oakland, not San Francisco, because that's where the arena was. The Warriors arena was in Oakland up until a couple of years ago. But they played UConn in that 95 Sweet 16 game. And that was a UConn team with Ray Allen, with Donnie Marshall, with, oh God, who else was on that team? And Maryland lost. And Maryland was favored in that game. They were the higher seeded team and favored. And that was Joe Smith's final game as a Terp. So they're going back to the Bay Area for the, I don't think they've played in San Francisco or Oakland since. I could be wrong about that. Maybe San Jose. I don't know. Thursday night against Florida. All right. Any football news from over the weekend with our team? Ben's got his mock draft out, and we'll talk about that in a moment. But anything newsworthy over the weekend?
Unless I missed something, I don't think so. You know, we talked to a bunch of the players last week, including Debo Samuel, and I think we're pretty much done with that, unless they do some other moves here. So, you know, just catching up with those guys. I think the league as a whole, free agency is really quieted down for sure. You know, probably a lot of teams are waiting to see what's going to happen with the quarterbacks, the Aaron Rodgers and all, and that will not only shape the quarterback market, but also have other teams, you know, be willing to sort of open up the checkbook again and start making moves. But no, I mean, look, I think this team has done what it intended to do, and that is give themselves options in the draft. Pretty much every position, for the most part, has a rotation that if you said this is what they're doing for week one, maybe it's not the highest end, but like, you know, the floor is good enough. So, you know, I think they've largely done their job. Still need, you know, a sort of a higher end edge defender would be good, and you know, you could probably get another corner and some speed on offense. But you know, by and large, I think they've kind of done most of the stuff, and now, you know, you see if there's anything that shakes out in free agency, or just wait for the draft.
All right, Ben's got what version of this draft is this mock 1.0? What is this it?
This is the first one I've done, and probably the only full first round I'll have on The Athletic. They throw me a bone every once in a while and let me do these things. So that is up.
All right. Ben's got his 2025 first round mock draft out. Subscribe to The Athletic, people. It's totally worth it. I'm a subscriber. Follow Ben on Twitter, on X, at Ben Standing. He's got a podcast called Last Man Standing. You can get that wherever you get your podcast. So I don't want to go through the whole first round. I want people to read it. But let's talk about what you did with Washington in your mock.
Well, you know, this one is, probably a little bit of wish fulfillment in the sense of, you know, with only five picks and the first round falling the way that I have it, where the edge rushers that I would think would be the guys that they would consider there all go right before they pick for the most part. So I have them trading down with Cleveland. Cleveland already takes the quarterback at 2 with Shedeur Sanders, but you know, their current left tackle, I believe right now, is Cornelius Lucas. So, you know, as we saw here for many years, like, you know, that's the stopgap answer. So I had them trading up to get a tackle that fell a little bit. And then for Washington, get a pick, I think, right, a pick this year and a pick for next year as well. And, I think that's kind of what they need to do, but also like, when you get to the end of the first, I think the most interesting thing, whether there's a trade or not, is that the more I've been doing this and then looking what some other people are doing, you're seeing a lot more cornerbacks being projected to Washington. And I think that to me is a reflection of like best player available at a need position, that it just doesn't, you know, again, we could all be wrong, but like at the moment, it's sort of feeling like there's not necessarily going to be a defensive end that is like clearly the obvious pick overall, and knowing that that position is deeper and corner is not the most deepest position, that it's, you know, more the idea of them taking corner with that first pick again, whether it's at 29 or in my case dropping down to 33, and then, you know, presumably getting a defensive end in that second round pick. So, you know, I think that is something to keep an eye on. You know, they do need both of those picks, at least in theory with cornerback. If Marshon Lattimore, you know, plays like he has previously in his career, then they have a stud there, and not to mention Mikey Sanders still look good, whereas on the defensive line, defensive end, you know, it's a lot of workmanlike guys, but there's no obvious, like, upside there, and that's why that's more prominent. But, yeah, I think that's something to keep an eye on as we're about a month out, is that the cornerback, you know, there may be more options there than there will be at edge.
Look, there's what you just described, you know, the edge rushers, the defensive ends they'd be interested in are gone. But this is also a draft that's deep at defensive tackle, and as we've discussed, and you just talked about the Cleveland need, at tackle. What do you think they would do if they got to 29, couldn't trade back, and the best player on their board was a D tackle or a defensive tackle or an offensive tackle?
Well, defensive tackle is a little bit easier, right? Because you're rotating these guys in and out. I mean, you know, they you know, between Deron Payne, Johnny Newton, Javon Kinlaw, Sheldon Day, you know, Eddie Goldman, like, they, you know, they're pretty well stocked there. So there's really no, like, immediate need. Like, even like last year, like, forget, like, you know, we Fedarian Mathers hadn't shown that much. So Johnny Newton at a minimum was going to be the third guy. And then, you know, that still gets you on the field, you know, 50% of the snaps or more sometimes, or it can be. So this time, though, that'd be a little bit trickier, even though you appreciate the fact that Deron Payne, you know, this could be his last year if he gets the John Allen treatment next offseason. So that's trickier. Tackle's even more complicated because you don't substitute there unless you have, you know, injuries. So you've got Tunsil on the one side. You know, you've got Brandon Coleman. Even if you said, well, just move Coleman to guard, okay, but, you know, but they already have Allegretti and Cosme, and even from a longer-term perspective, I guess Allegretti could be a, you know, second year and a third-year deal. Maybe he's in trouble after next year, but, you know, that gets tough. So that would be more of a challenge. I guess I would have to know, is, like, overwhelmingly the offensive tackle is that much better than anybody else. If it is, then, you know, you take it and you figure it out, but otherwise, I just would be – I don't know how you're going to make that work. And again, they only have the five picks. So if you're taking a guy who's just flat out not going to play for the most part this year, you know, that's a tougher pill to swallow. But, you know, if the guy is that much better, then, you know, you do it and you go from there.
What do you think they are hoping to get from Deron Payne this year? Or realistically think they'll get? Hoping is the wrong way. Obviously, they're hoping for, you know, a massive season. What do you think they realistically believe they'll get from Deron Payne this year?
Yeah, I mean, I talked about this on not my most recent podcast episode, but the one before that. Like, it was a sort of stream of consciousness. Like, you know, we keep saying, how are they? Is the defense actually better? I know we've talked about that. You know, hard to say. Maybe on the edges there. I don't mean the, well, I guess I mean slightly the defensive edges, but, like, you know, maybe on some level they're better, but, like, it's nothing that dramatic, and we'll see. You know, there is one way to get better, and that is Deron Payne plays like he did when he got the contract, because that version has not been on the field for Washington the last couple of years. I mean, he's been fine, but, like, nothing, you know, the sack totals aren't even close to what they were that breakout year. He's not nearly as, you know, we can go, like, games it felt like this year without even mentioning him, because other players were, you know, last year was obviously a lot of fun. We didn't have to, like, if Deron Payne was doing what he did last year under the previous regime, I think he's getting a lot more criticism. So, you know, I don't know. Maybe it's just as simple as saying to him, hey, you know, reasonable chance you're going to get released next offseason, so this might be your contract year, so keep that in mind and maybe play like that, because that's what they need. If he could be the guy, if he could be that disruptive presence in the middle, that's the biggest bonus for this defense. That's where you could see things change, especially, you know, now next to Johnny Newton. You're hoping he's obviously going to be a better player after, you know, he missed pretty much all off season last year because of his foot surgeries. Now he's coming in, you know, fresh for a second season. Like, that's the best scenario for them to really improve. But you know, other than the 1 year of his career, he's never really had sort of a huge year. I mean, he's been fine. Again, I mean, it's not like he's not been a good player, but they're not paying to be good. They're paying to be a lot more, and, you know, compared to the way people talk about in the, just in the division alone, Dexter Lawrence and Javon Carter, like, they're not getting discussed in that group. And that's what they're going to need. So I don't know what they expect of him, but that's what they, whatever they need to do, even if it is to say, hey, this might be your contract year, you maybe want to, you know, get going here.
One last one, and I'll let you run. In your mock draft, you had a couple of edges, actually three of them going right before Washington at 29. You know, who's the guy that fits sort of the type that we know that they're looking for? You know, the RAS score, the leadership, the culture fit, etc. Is there an edge? Is there a defensive end that could make it into the 20s to early 30s that fits that description?
Yeah, so, you know, the ones right before, the two picks right before Ezarascu, if I'm saying that right, from Boston College.
From BC.
And Pierce, from BC and Pierce from Tennessee. Like, putting aside, like, whatever questions you have there, like, these are, you know, pure, like, edge guys, you know, lighter players coming off the perimeter, et cetera. But they're talking about wanting seemingly more of, like, an edge defender, like a bigger defensive end. Somebody's obviously get after the pass rush, but they're trying to slow down the opponent's run game,
right?
And I don't necessarily know that these guys are built for that. I think the two guys who, to me, have stand out in that regard are two guys who are not getting picked or not getting mocked in the first round, and that's Nick Scorton from Texas A&M and Landon Jackson from Arkansas. These guys are, like, considered to be highly competitive. They were both team captains in college. You know, they're athletic. Like, they can do a lot. They're just, you know, being viewed as guys who are not necessarily top 32 picks. And so this is another thing with a trade down. Again, if the public perception is accurate, you know, this is where a trade down could work, because you can, you know, in the second round, you know, a little bit easier to take a guy like that, you know, better value or whatever, while getting somebody that fits what they're looking to do. So I think that's part of the challenge. It just feels like most of the defensive ends that we're talking about this year are guys who are more like those 3-4 outside linebackers, or at least built that way, rather than somebody who's really going to, you know, stand up on the edge and be a force like that. So I think that's the kind of the challenge. I mean, look, you can't get everything you want always. And they, you know, they brought in Javon Kinlaw seemingly to use him some more at edge. So maybe, you know, that becomes the plan in this year. And they hope that one of these lighter defensive ends, you know, puts on weight over time, and, you know, they can improve them as a run defender, what have you. But, and, you know, so maybe it's not as big of a deal for this year, and they can get after the quarterback, which is, you know, I think they still need that. They lost, obviously, Dante Fowler, gave them that last year, and there's no obvious, like, guy to replace that to some degree right now. I mean, Dietrich Weiss, perhaps. But so, you know, I think that to me is kind of the rub. I don't know that they're physically the right fit, but those two other guys, Thornton and Jackson, unless they think that they are worthy of that 29th spot, and, you know, it's all, sometimes we just get caught up in the, somebody's overdrafted, you know, the picking between 29 and 45 is probably, you know, right, you're talking about the same guy for the most part. So that, you know, maybe they think it knows her, but I think those two guys fit the profile more than some of the ones that I have going in the first round. But that's, you know, that's a broader view versus a very specific one for what Washington might want.
All right, Ben has Azaria Thomas, corner, Florida State, going in the second round after a trade back with the Browns. You can catch his whole first round. He's got three quarterbacks in the first round on The Athletic. Subscribe. Thanks. I'll talk to you later.
Awesome, man. Congrats on the Terps. Way to go.
That was a big one. Felt good. Thanks. Appreciate it. Yep. We'll talk to Randolph Childress. He was a hero for Wake Forest in one of the great ACC tournament runs of all time. He's doing a lot of college basketball analysis work. He'll join us next.
Out in Ashburn at Lost Rhino Brew Pub, 5 o'clock, our Nats season preview kicks off. We're celebrating the release of the Hitting Dingers IPA that they've got out here at Lost Rhino Brew Pub in Ashburn. Grant and Danny with you on the Fan, and we are joined now by longtime friend of the program, the people's punter, really the holder for the Washington Commanders, Tressway. It is good to see you, brother.
You too,
so,
man.
We've been talking about for like a year. We're like, we got to get together.
Yes.
We'll get you some wings, get a beer. I texted you a couple days ago. I'm like, you know, we're coming out your way.
You did.
So I'm glad that we could put this thing together. to celebrate the return of Tress Way after your new one-year deal.
You're crazy.
You're back for another year.
Back for another year.
Longest tenured member of the organization.
12, man. We met my rookie year.
That's right.
12 years. That's pretty awesome.
That was like 3.5 kids ago for me, right?
Yeah.
Half, not because we have half of a child, but because we have a fourth on the way.
I'd like to hear the science behind that.
Yes. Yeah. There's a fourth on the way. It's got a few months left of development.
All right. There you go.
And then it'll be here. But and mortgages and cars and a lot of kids for you and a marriage as well.
Yeah.
But you're all grown up and you are, I was just talking to you, you're one of the reps for the club that has to go and basically hear what the union thinks.
Yeah, yeah.
And then report back to other players.
Yeah.
Because you're a responsible guy that can be trusted.
Thank you.
With such matters.
Thank you.
Normally, they send you to random cities.
Correct.
It's like, I got to go here.
Yeah.
Where were you this past trip?
Well, they've really focused on getting the attendance up. And they were like, well, what can we do to really ensure that guys get there? And so they offered to fly you and your family to the meetings and put you up in the hotel for the week. And they offered up Maui this year. So attendance was 100%. We did a survey at the end, and it said, hey, how much did the location affect, like, you coming to the meetings? And it was like 1 to 10. And I was like, I was going to come regardless. I'm the voter. Like, I'm going to go. But if they're asking just in case they're thinking next year, I'm going to go ahead and put 10. Like, let's be honest here. So it was unreal, man.
Maybe that's what they've got to do annually. The combine every year is in Indianapolis.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, there are these. Used to be that the NFL draft was at Radio City Music Hall.
Yeah, every year.
Maybe these union meetings have to be in Maui.
You know what's a shame is that I could have put that in motion, and we could have voted on that right there.
You should have.
And it just
slammed the gavel.
That's a freaking missed opportunity right there.
Yeah, I needed you to work on that. but the off season for you. So was there ever a time when you thought maybe you weren't coming back? How does that work? Or is it as simple as they'll get to me?
Yeah.
Like, I want to be here.
Yeah.
They want me here. Because every time we'd go through our list of free agents of who needs to come back and who doesn't, it's so obvious when you've got a really good punter you don't have to worry about. But it's also not a thing where if you want to be here, it's not like you're just going to like call Adam Peters and be like, just sign with the Bears, man. Sorry about your luck. So like, how did the process go?
Yeah, yeah. So whenever we had the whole change, the whole regime change going into this year, I was going into the last year of my contract, and oldest player on the team, been here a long time, have just freaking loved it and don't want to play anywhere else. And going into this last season, I was like, man, you know, like, I don't know how to necessarily approach this. Like, do I approach this like this is my last season here? Like, because, hey, you know, at some point, I hope it's not for a while, but at some point, somebody else is going to have to punt for Washington. Like, I will have to dip out at some point.
Well, but I've actually raised the idea that when you're done, we just don't punt anymore. But you know how you retire jerseys?
Yeah.
We're going to retire the position.
Well, and like
just,
you know,
go for all the fourth downs like we're Holy Cross.
Yeah, and like, honestly, if we have to throw in like the little sneaky fake punts, I can try and convert that way as well instead of giving them. Now,
2 for 2, 38 yards in your career.
I'm 3 for 3.
I've got you 2 for 2 on Pro Football Reference.
It's incorrect.
Really?
Ask me my stats. I will give better stats than anything you find online. They may not be accurate, but this one is. 3 for 3.
Hold on.
I threw a fade against the Giants in 2015. Threw an out route
to
Quentin Dunbar. Quentin Dunbar came in as a wide receiver, couldn't catch so bad that they moved him to DB. Yeah, let's throw a fake punt to him. Let's give him a shot.
Okay, so who were you playing in that game?
We were playing the Giants at MetLife.
Was that Puma?
That was Puma.
Puma, let's rage.
Yes.
And okay.
Colorado was against the Eagles out route in 2018 at home. We were eliminated, but it was a night game, and threw an out route against the Eagles to J.U. Chesson. And then,
okay, I only remember that because that name, that's not a name I've ever thought of for one other second otherwise, with all due respect to the Chessons.
Yes, and so, and then obviously to Ben.
Oh, you know what? Okay, so here's what happened. I guarantee
postseason.
Exactly. 2 for 2 for 38 yards.
That's fair.
Is going to be your regular season stats.
Yeah.
Because whenever season is quantified differently.
I think I talk about my stats like 3 or 4 times a day to like different people whoever's willing to listen. So that's fair. I never talk about my postseason stats.
All right. So, Darius, give me a little game show music. I was going to save this for later in our sit down, in our hour together.
We're there now.
But we've already gotten here. So I want to quiz Tress Way on his own career a little bit. And you're kind of sticking your chest out.
No, I'm not. Wait,
but you're telling me you know your numbers.
Oh, I was going to say, I just leaned up to take a sip of the new beer. So.
Oh, well, yeah. And how is it?
Phenomenal. Yeah? I'm a big hazy IPA guy.
Hitting dingers,
the only thing
baby.
I'm nervous about is this microphone sounds super clear, so I may be burping up hitting dingers into the mic.
Yeah, and those are the dingers you hit after you drink it on air, I think. Yeah. All right, but I didn't know if you were a guy that like knew the back of your baseball card.
I do not.
It sounds like you might.
Well, listen,
you got some
whenever
pretty distinct memories of these fake
the
punts.
Fake punts, yes, I do, because I'm a punter, and I get a chance to throw the ball. So, yeah, I rewatch those at least 3 or 4 times a day.
All right. How many punts have you had blocked in your career?
One is too many, but I'll say 3.
On the nose. 3 blocked punts.
Yep. Thank you.
All right.
I could probably remember all of them, too, going back. But
all right,
that was
give me
guess.
Them. Let's hear them.
Got one blocked against Dallas because Dallas scored on offense, defense, and special teams of that
game.
Oh,
I remember that game.
Just
yes.
The waxing was just – that was terrible.
That wasn't the, like, 800-7 game at their place, was
yes,
it?
Yes, it was.
I don't want to talk anymore about that.
Horrible.
Go to the next one.
My first game ever in the NFL against the Houston Texans at Houston 2014 blocked.
Really?
Yep. Alfred Ballou running back up and under, boom, blocked.
That was week one.
Week one.
Yeah.
My first game.
I think that was Jay's Gruden's first game
it
ever,
was.
Too.
Yes.
Okay.
And then, crap. Oh, and then Dallas 2 years ago. Freaking Dallas.
What are we doing here?
It's Dallas. Well, Fossil's gone now. He's a great coordinator. He's in Tennessee, so just go.
All right. Your longest punt distance and against what team?
79 against the New York Giants.
I've got 79 against the Carolina Panthers.
Oh, it is the Panthers.
79 yards. He knew it, though.
Oh, it was 77 against the Giants.
You're on a heater right
now.
Dadgummit. 77 is number 2 on the list.
Yes.
And that was year 1.
Yeah.
All right. This one's fun. I'm excited about this one. How many career rushing yards do you have?
Oh, crap. I didn't make it.
Over, under, 0.5.
Over, under? It was under. I got tackled behind the line of scrimmage, I think. Is it negative?
I've got you at 2 rushing yards in
your
career.
I see. I crossed the line of scrimmage, didn't get the first down.
How about that?
The St. Louis Rams. Whenever I tell some of my young teammates I played against the St. Louis
that
Rams.
That makes you sound so old.
Dude, I told one of my buddies, I was like, yeah, I used to sit here and talk with D-Hall all the time, and like he was just good. And I said like something cool that D-Hall used to do, and one of my teammates goes, dude, you play with D-Hall? I was just like, yeah, man. And he looked at me and goes, how old are you?
I
was like, that backfired. I was he's going to think this is cool.
He's a DB's coach now, so I guess that's a thing. That is, to me, as a sports fan, one of the things that dates you. There's really two. Now that I'm in my mid, I'm an old guy, mid-30s, right?
Oh, yeah, samesies.
All right, so I think what are you?
I'm turning 35 in 2 weeks.
Oh, I'm older than you. You're such a young guy.
Thank
you. I'm 36.
See?
All right, so the point of the dude's story is, though, when a junior of a player I loved is now playing, and this is a thing in baseball, I'll just tell you.
Oh, yeah.
Like Vladimir Guerrero Jr.
Yes.
No, man. Your dad was my guy.
That's
like,
right.
You can't
That's
be
right.
here yet.
Isn't there a young Biggio playing right now, too?
Kevin Biggio.
Yeah.
Every Blue Jay player, Bo Bichette.
Bichette.
You know, it's Dante Bichette's kid.
Yeah.
But when the kid of the player that I liked his card, that I pretended to be him in my yard,
you're there, man.
I might as well be 100.
Are you starting to say these kids? Like I find myself saying that with college games now. I'm like,
totally.
These kids have it made.
Well,
look
the
at
kid
these
that
kids.
Hit the kid. Here we go. The kid that hit the game winner for Maryland the other night. His name's Derek Queen. He's a freshman. Somehow he's 20. I thought he would have been 18, but he looks 12.
Yes.
He has braces. He's got a couple of pimples on his
12.
Face. And so he started talking after the game. It's a true story. And they're like, Derek, you hit the game winner, whatever. And he starts talking. And it was like my son was talking. Like, he's 4. And I thought about it. He is closer to my son's age than he is my age.
Yeah.
And I said, I looked over at my wife. I'm like, this is just a boy.
We're there, man.
He's so young, this boy.
Just accept it.
5 minutes earlier, I'm just killing him. I'm like, get to the rim, you moron. And then he starts talking. And I'm like, he's just a sweet boy.
Yes.
This is just someone's kid.
Yes.
All right. I got another one for you.
All right.
By the way, 2 career rushing yards for Tressway.
I didn't hear it.
2 career rushing yards.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Almost fumbled.
Next stop.
Almost fumbled.
Franchise record. Look out, Riggins and company. All right. 776 career punts.
Right. Okay.
776. How many career tackles? And would there ever be, like, did you do kickoffs a couple times? Is there another reason where you could have made a tackle? or is it just those 776 punts? Because I'm assuming they never lined you up at safety for a play.
There's been a couple of times when somebody's busted open on like a fade down the sideline, or like when Saquon took off down the sideline, I thought maybe I could get on the not top 10 if I just smoke him when he's
do
not
the Mike
looking.
Tomlin thing just where you like yeah. come out and trip him?
Yeah. All right. The fun fact in there is one of those on Monday Night Football against Dallas, I got the Tostitos crunch of the game because I flipped Lucky Whitehead like upside down on a tackle.
Do you get anything? Like a box of...
I thought I would.
A shipment of a bunch of Tostitos?
Like golden Tostitos. Right. Yeah. You know, something
just
cool.
Just a bag that no one's ever had. I'll send, sealed just so.
I'll shoot him an email.
I'll do it for you.
Yeah, thank
we got
you.
People for that.
All right, I'm going to go... I'll go four.
Nine.
What?
Nine career tackles for this guy.
Look out. Uh-huh. Oh, thank you. Man, the gallery here.
London Fletcher.
Yeah, everybody. I tell you, I mean, what is it, quadruple threat now? Run, pass. Tackle, and yeah. punt?
Well,
no, I
forgot.
Can hold.
That's true. Hold.
Golly.
All right, last one.
All right.
This one I think you should know.
Okay.
How many Player of the Week awards have you won?
No,
Special Teams Player of the Week.
All right. 1 and 19. No, 1 and 18, 1 and 19, 2 and 20, 1 and 23. I'm going five.
Five is correct. The five times Special Teams Player
you know,
of the Week.
Do you know the fun fact on that?
I do
is
not.
That I have had better performances in games, but you have to win to get that award. So
oh if, no way.
If Burrow goes out and throws for 450 and four tugs, if the Bengals lose, he doesn't get AFC Player of the Week.
Is that a real thing?
You have to win.
Well, that's very stupid.
Your team has to win.
That's really dumb. It's an individual award. Yeah.
I think like technically like two or three of my best games, if you will, of just averages and inside the 20s, like we lost by a field goal or something like that. And yeah.
So am I wrong in saying, statistically speaking, the thing that I would imagine you care a lot about is inside the 20?
Percentage.
Percentage.
Yes.
And then not touchbacks.
Yeah.
More, I mean, maybe your average, I don't know if that, because, but
yeah,
how could that matter? Because you don't know where you're trying to punt to.
That's the biggest thing is like the net average is what gets you into the Pro Bowl every year, but your inside the 20 percentage will show just like, so my favorite place to punt from is from the minus 35 yard line because you can just cut it loose for 50.
All right, so remember this, guys. So that means the offense is around midfield.
I have videos of my buddies like filming me like getting ready to punt, and like it'll be one of the wives like filming my buddy, and it falls on the minus 36. This is the go zone, and it's just because if I hit a touchback.
Do you mean if you're standing there, or do you mean when the offense is
balls
there?
On the in the mid 30s? You can just
so
cut
you
it loose.
You want a first down on like an 11-yard pass to McLaurin, and then three straight runs for zero.
Well,
and you're running out there to
here's the deal. I love to punt. I understand that we don't want to punt.
You guys you didn't like to do it very much this past year.
That was crazy this year. Cliff was the bomb. He'd be like, Tris, how many times you punt this game? I was like, I had one. He's like, oh, that's my bad.
Had to call him and have him on the show just to make sure he was still on the team.
Yeah, yeah.
There was a couple of weeks where we just weren't sure anymore.
I was in the hotel in Arizona, and we were talking. I was like, yeah, I popped up, grabbed a pretzel, and popcorn got a little slippery to hold. I got nervous, so yeah.
No TV time for you this season. Tress Way, multi-time Pro Bowlers with us. We are live today out at Lost Rhino Brew Pub in Ashburn. He's hanging out on Grant and Danny.
Right now, we're jumping on the Rude guest hotline. Rude makes the most reliable HVAC products in the DMV to talk to our guy, Mr. Neil Greenberg. Greenberg, what's up, dude? How are you?
I'm doing super. How are you?
I'm good, man. Let's start caps, and then we'll get to hoops. You know, they lost last night, and we're not giving out avocado toast or participation trophies, but it really seemed pretty clear that's the two best teams in hockey. Winnipeg seems a little faster, but the Caps seem a little bigger. What'd you think just of that matchup?
I thought it was fine. I mean, it's, a loss in overtime, which can be a little fluky at times. I mean, you know, these are the kind of the games that you want to see Washington at least acquit themselves well, because these are the potential, playoff matchups once we get into, you know, the Stanley Cup territory, Winnipeg being in the West, one of the better teams in the West. So I think it's fine. I mean, the Capitals are in a weird spot because they've already clinched. They're in the running for best record. They're in the chase for the Ovi's in the chase for the Gretzky record, and then you know, also you got to start thinking about, you know, how much do you want to push these guys? Like, what's the ultimate goal here? And obviously the ultimate goal is a deep playoff run. And, you know, if that means that Ovechkin doesn't get the record this year, you kind of have to wait those a little bit. You know, Carlson 35, Ovechkin well documented 39, Tom Wilson in his 30, you know, just 30, Nick Dowd 34. I mean, this is hockey old-ish territory. The fact that they played well, you want to see them at least get into the postseason somewhat fresh.
Yeah,
agree with that. In hockey, would they rest guys late, like those last two away games or something? Like, when could they clinch the one seed? How close is that?
They're pretty close. I don't know exactly when, but typically you don't see resting in hockey like you do in football and basketball. Maybe that last game.
You might see resting in basketball in November.
You see resting in basketball all the time.
it's obviously not that egregious, but you know, maybe the last game you'll see some resting. Again, though, you know, if Ovechkin is within one goal, you know, he only skates 17 minutes a night. Like, how much rest do you give these guys? It's tough. I mean, it's tough. It's an art and a science, and you know, it's going to be. I don't know what Carberry's going to do. But you'd have to think that everyone's on the same page that a deep playoff run is more important than the Ovechkin record in 2025.
I agree totally with that.
I think organizationally they all do, right?
Yeah, I mean, you'd have to think that. I mean, this doesn't seem like a selfish type of thing. And, you know, we're at kind of the crunch time here where every missed game, every game Ovechkin goes without a goal, like, exponentially makes this more difficult to reach. Like, I have it as an 18% chance he doesn't get the record this year. And a lot of the games that I have as most likely are, like, April 12th against Columbus. That's game 79. April 10th at Carolina, obviously game 78. I mean, like, they're all low, you know, late 70s, early 80 game rest of the season, 80, 81, 82, where I have him breaking the record. So, you know, he goes a game without a goal. I mean, that becomes, it becomes exponentially harder.
If you begin to break it down a little bit, you look at the game last night, and like JP said, they're bigger, the Caps. Winnipeg, they fly, okay? But the Caps team is damn good as well. What would they have to do if they get into a series and take the 4 out of 3? I mean, 4 out of 7.
I mean, I think they just got to be healthy and then just keep doing what they're doing. I mean, it all depends on the matchup, right? And I think the Capitals are built well enough that they can adapt a little bit, right? Like, they may not be able to outskate you on the ice, but they have a lot of guys that can score. They can play a heavy game. They can get good goaltending. They can get scoring from the blue line. Like, there's a lot of different ways that this Capitals team can beat you. It's not like a one-trick pony type of situation, no pun intended, where, you know, they can only beat you like fun and gun like we saw like in the Bruce Boudreau era.
Right.
Or grind you down like we saw in the Ovechkin, the Oates era, Oates-Hunter era. I mean, this team has some flexibility to it. Right now, health is the main thing, and, you know, you can't have Ovechkin go cold in the playoffs. Like, that, to me, is the most important thing because there is secondary scoring around him. But I think if he goes cold, I think people start to get nervous. Whether they want to admit that or not, I think if, you know, Ovechkin's not scoring, people start to look around and say, okay, well, if he can't score, like, you know, maybe they figured something out type of thing. And, you know, that's just me being, you know, subjective about it, but I can see something like that happening.
Dude, I tend to agree with you. I wonder, I think 6-11 weirdly sounds better than 7-12 did, but every game it does kind of start to feel like, oh man, this could or could not happen, and it's all right on the verge. The other thing I've really been kind of trying to keep an eye on Just because I think you and other folks I've talked to have said the 8-1 matchup against the Rangers would not be ideal. Just because of the talent the Rangers have. If it was to happen today, it'd be Caps versus Canadiens, Montreal. And it's just too early to keep an eye on that stuff. But like, it looks like the 8 seed is going to come from Rangers, Islanders, or Montreal. And I imagine the Rangers are the one matchup you really want to avoid. But there's a part of me on a personal level that remembers the President's Trophy Caps team, the 1 seed, losing to the 8 seed, Montreal Canadiens. And that damn Yaroslav Halak
stood on his head.
Yeah, he was a brick wall that series. I mean, that was the Capitals going cold, right? Like I just kind of mentioned that, and you know that happens in hockey. I mean, hockey is a fluky game. You know, Montreal is interesting because they have they have Caulfield and Suzuki, and then they just have a lot of other guys that can score, right? Like they're not as top-heavy as I would say Washington is. They got a lot of guys in double digits. I want to say like 11 guys, could be 12. So, you know, that's a lot of scoring depth. And that's, you know, that's tough. If you're always got guys on the ice that can score, whether it's the first line or the fourth line, you know, that's something that you always have to be worried about. Obviously, the Rangers have the historic, you know, series implications. You know, these guys have played each other a lot in the playoffs. It seemed like one time they were always playing each other in the first round.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I mean, I think that Montreal is probably the tougher draw, only because I think that they're a little bit deeper. But again, I think Washington has shown they can play with anybody, and I think that they'll be fine. I almost think the Ranger matchup's a little bit better for them.
We're talking with our friend Neil Greenberg here on the Rude Guest Hotline. You can follow Neil at N Greenberg. Read his work in the Washington Post. Let's switch it up here, Greenberg. We're going to hoops. NCAA tournament. You had said fade the SEC in the NCAA tournament. I think fading the bottom half of the SEC worked, but what they get 13 in and 7 are in the Sweet 16. How do you feel about one of your predictions?
Yeah, that one hasn't aged as well as fading St. John's did.
True.
You know, like you said, the SEC has got a lot of good teams in, also number 10 Arkansas. So far it hasn't worked out. I'm still not convinced like Kentucky and Alabama are that good. So we'll see if they continue to go. You know, I think Auburn has a really nice path into the Final Four. They play Michigan. You know, they play the winner of Ole Miss, Michigan State, two teams that aren't ranked very high in Pomeroy's rankings. They don't have to deal with Duke until later. So I think Auburn got a really nice path. And then BYU probably has the toughest path. But I think that, you know, yeah, the SEC has played well. I mean, and look, let's face it. I mean, the chalk has played well. So there were a lot of the top seeded teams, at least the teams that have gone through, right? 2 number one seeds, 2 seeds, and a 3 seed from the SEC. You know, that's kind of been this tournament. The top seeds moving on. I'm not ready to say I was completely wrong yet, but I don't look as right as I thought I would.
Who do you think at this point now was left should be favorite?
In the tournament or the SEC?
Tournament. Not worry about it. Just the whole tournament.
Yeah, Duke still looks good. I have no reason to be off my Maryland versus Duke final right now.
Wow.
I know, ironically, Maryland won on a buzzer beater after getting beat by a dozen or so buzzer beaters, it felt like. But Maryland playing Florida, again, I'm still not sold on the SEC. I think Maryland could beat Florida. Then they play at the Texas Tech or Arkansas. I think that's fine. I have no reason to be off my final of Duke, Maryland. And, you know, I think that's still the smart play in this tournament.
Why do you like Maryland so much against Florida?
I just like Maryland in general. I think that, you know, Maryland having such a cohesive start, a bunch, you know, five starters is really good for them. You know, you get a lot of rest in between games. So I think that certainly as well. Florida and both defenses like to slow the pace down in this matchup. So I don't think we're going to get as many possessions as maybe you would against a more high-tempo team, especially on defense. So they both like to push the ball up on offense, but then they really like to grind it down on defense. So I think that always favors the underdog, and in this case it's a slight underdog for Maryland. You know, I think Maryland is, you know, they're a good team, and, you know, I think that they the experience on the court with the five starters, not necessarily relying as much on the bench, is really good for them.
Dude, the breaks in these tournament games are so long. Like, I'm not worried about their legs, you know? And if you
that's what I'm saying, too. Like, a lot of people are like, well, you know, they can't play the whole game. Well, actually, they can because, you know, I don't know if you ever know, if you ever looked at this, but, like, the
breaks.
Last minute of a college game takes, like, 20 minutes of real time.
Oh, they go through a lot of crap.
I mean, the reviews, like, and everything.
Like, they have time to literally go crack some crabs open, eat them, wash up, and get back on the court. I mean, so, like, I don't worry about that. And, you know, I think Maryland has looked really good this year.
I think Maryland's looked really good. What did you think of the buzzer beater? Pretty damn cool that the Terps are going to be.
I mean, I thought it was good. I mean, you know, it's, you know, look, you're always going to have some breaks go your way. Maryland, as I said earlier, has been at the wrong end of buzzer beaters for a while. Yeah, I mean, look, count it, move on. I know it's a tough break, but I'm fine with those types. All those things even out over time.
Well, dude, Maryland been on the wrong end of all of them, it seems.
That's what I'm saying. Like, it's ironic that they actually moved on against a really good team with a buzzer beater. And that's, you know, like I said, that stuff evens out.
That Colorado State team was good. That kid Clifford is good, even if he should have been.
Dirty, though.
He should have been ejected in the first quarter or the first half. All right, Greenberg, you are an analytical fella. You crunch the numbers, and ultimately this is a number-based question. I recognize it might not be exactly the stuff we always ask you about, but I know you pay attention to all of it. The Kevin Willard stuff over the last week. We're talking with our friend Neil Greenberg from the Washington Post. I think he's applying leverage because he has it. I think he knew Evans was leaving, and so he just outed it rather than let that process drag on. I don't think he's going anywhere, but it does give me some pause that Patino's going to Xavier and not Villanova. Where do you land on all that Kevin Willard stuff?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's... Look, you're in the tournament. Like, you're a good team with a chance to go deep in the tournament. You don't want this side circus act, right? Like, you don't want people talking about the coach, will he or won't he go somewhere, and he said what about who, and, like, you know, like, you don't want this type of stuff at this time of the year. You know, I think that it's not a situation, like, sometimes we see coaches, like, they know their team so well, like, they know they have to deflect some of the news cycle away from them onto something trivial, and like, they do that in a way to try to, like, oh, look at the shiny object over here. I don't think that's what it was. I just think it was an ill-timed comments at a time when, you know, you have a really good team that has a chance to make a deep run for the first time in a while. Like, just get your kids ready, and then if you want to air some dirty laundry, like, you have plenty of time to do it. You know, and then to say, well, I'm staying here, like, you know, 100% I'm staying here, or whatever the quote was.
He,
like,
didn't say that yet.
He said, I'm staying here for now.
He said for now. He made sure he said for now, which tells me this is not just him playing around. He seriously has talked to Villanova.
Yeah, it's possible. But again, I mean, like, you don't want distractions now. Like, if you just got balanced, for sure, like, you know, do whatever you want to do.
Well,
but
what's fascinating, specific to that point, is if he had kicked all, he kicked a hornet's nest, right? Whether he was forced to or chose to or whatever, he decided to create. Like, there was one dude that could have shut all this down and said, I'm not talking about anything till our season's over. Cliff Kingsbury did it, right? Like, you can go that route. And he did. He chose not to, and that's okay. I'm not knocking him for it. But, like, imagine if Queen Shot doesn't go in, and they're the only four seed that loses, and Colorado State's the only the only Cinderella story. How different is all of this? You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, and that's the thing. Like, it's there's so many other things that you want to be talking about, and whether or not you're staying, and what he said, et cetera, is just not one of them. You just had a buzzer beater. You're going up against Florida, one of the best teams in the country. Just focus on basketball. I mean, I get that's easier said than done, and people get upset about something and feel like, you know, I have my chance to air it, and I'm going to do it. And, you know, maybe, you know, it's probably for leverage, and it's probably for, you know, sour grapes type stuff. I mean, I'm just speculating, but that to me is what it looks like. And, you know, just play the game for now, and there'll be plenty of time for you to air your laundry, write your book, or whatever it is you want to do.
Yeah. Last thing. Baseball starts tomorrow. I know you're fired up about your Mets chances. We know how I feel about the Mets. Give me Nats, O's, World Series predictions, and hopefully you don't mention your Mets.
I don't know if the Mets are going to be – I am less optimistic about the Mets than probably most people. I think that there's just other good teams, one in their division with the Braves, one across town in the Yankees. I think the Phillies are probably a little bit better. So I think that, like, the division itself is very difficult. And I know that they spend a lot of money and they got Soto and everything is great. But again, I mean, you have two other teams that can also spend some money and have really good players. I think both the Braves and the Phillies are probably better choices for the World Series than the Mets are. And, you know, the Nats, you know, maybe 70 wins, got to start rebuilding, getting stuff together. But hopefully this money from TV, you know, makes its way onto the field, and they too can start to look a lot better in the division.
That would be great. I think the best thing that could happen this year is if Cruz and Wood really hit, and then you get money next year, kind of what they did with Worth a long time back. You sign a veteran that matters, you maybe get assigned some pitching. Generally, you got to develop hitters and pay for pitching, and we'll see how it goes.
Yeah, and they're in a tough spot in that division because, like I said, there's a lot of money being spent. Like, you have to make a decision if you're going to spend the money to be competitive or you're just going to be a feeder team for the ones that do. You know, you have it's a tough decision to make, but now with the TV contract, hopefully that makes the decision easier.
Greenberg, as always, appreciate you, brother.
Appreciate you,
text
bro.
Me any winners you got over the next couple days here.
I will. I love you guys. I'll talk to you soon.
All right, that's man, our guy, cool. Neil Greenberg. You can give him a follow at N Greenberg. Coming up at noon, Kevin Brockway is going to join us, covers the Florida Gators, give us a detailed breakdown of what the Terps are looking at when they face Florida tomorrow night, Sweet 16. Nobody go anywhere.
Welcome back. Chucky's coming to you live on 106.7 The Fan and the Team 980 here in the DMV, 910 The Fan, 105.1 FM in Richmond. We're streaming live on the free Odyssey app, and you can watch us on the Monumental Sports Network. Brought to you by friends at Crop Metcalf. They're the official heating and cooling company of the Junkies. It's Bish, Cakes, and JP running the three-man show. EB's, I'm not even sure where he is. Is he in Atlanta?
He's in Hotlanta.
Atlanta for his daughter's volleyball tournament. But join us right now to talk a little hoop. It's our pal Will Dawkins, Wizards GM. He's powered by Verizon. And Will, I don't know if you know this, we have some ice cream in studio, courtesy of the Washington Wizards. They teamed up with Ice Cream Jubilee, a DC-based ice cream shop. And they got flavors that are kind of connected to the rookies. We have Alex Creme de la Creme, Keyshawn's Game Changer Vanilla, and Bub's Banana Caramel Assist. Which I've tried.
So thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
No worries. A little early for the ice cream, but I'm glad you guys got a chance.
I mean, I could probably try ice cream for breakfast. I think I'm going to give it a go.
Hey, not against it. Not against it.
Before we had you on, we had a very enlightened discussion about rising lottery ticket prices. I know the only lottery you care about is the NBA draft lottery that's going to happen. Probably that's in May, right? It's usually in May.
You don't think he's ever bought a Mega Millions or a Powerball ticket?
When's the last time Will Dawkins, esteemed general manager of the Washington Wizards, bought a white trash lottery ticket?
Well, my mom and grandfather growing up would have me be like the little kid that ran in the store and like played their daily numbers.
Ah.
And they would play like the same lucky numbers over and over again. So I've done it a lot more times than you can imagine.
Did they ever win?
Not Mega Millions, but they would hit on some of the daily stuff pretty often. It was pretty surprising.
Mm. Like, what was the biggest takedown,
like,
if you remember?
The pick four?
$200?
Yeah, probably a couple grand was the biggest takeaway.
A couple grand is pretty good.
The thrill of doing it for them.
A couple grand is pretty good.
Yeah, but there's also they probably spent more than a couple grand on tickets. That's the downside to the lottery.
Hey, how do you guys
when you put it all together, I don't know if they made money. I'll say that.
How do you guys give up 162 points, Will?
Last night was definitely not our best effort. We've been playing much better of late. The road trip where we had that 13-day road trip and came back for two back-to-backs, mm-hmm. I thought we were pretty competitive. I thought we showed a little less resilience last night that we'll be able to fix. But again, not our best effort. We were down a lot of bodies. They obviously shot the ball really, really well. So we had been playing better of late, so we'll get back to it on Saturday.
All right, so let's get back to, you know, the reason the ice cream is here is it's the scoop. The Scoop the Future campaign, trying to get these guys recognized for their rookie seasons. And we'll just go through all three. Alex, in particular, who was the number two pick, has really played some good basketball this month. And I think you've talked about this in the past, that he's kind of taken steps each and every month. What have you seen from Alex during this rookie season?
Yeah, I think Alex has just continued to grow with his confidence. He's someone that, if you watched him post All-Star break, once we've been able to kind of make the changes to the team that have given them even more responsibility and kind of freed up their game, you've seen him kind of grow offensively. I think he's averaging over 17, shooting 36% from three, and just being comfortable with his usage. So he's someone that defensively, we talked about, was going to anchor our defense. As he's physically playing these guys a second time, you can just see how much more comfortable he is. But he's showed how rare he can be in stretching the floor, making threes, but also protecting the rim and the amount of assists he's getting. So he's finishing the year really, really strong right now. And we're happy for where he's at because he can kind of take that into the summertime and know where he needs to grow.
Is he a grinder? Does he work super hard?
One thing I will say is that all of our guys that we drafted this year love the gym and put in the work, and he's no different on that.
All right, so let's get to Keyshawn. I know that when I've gone to games and watched Keyshawn, he impresses me in particular. And I know Alex is known as a defensive guy, but Keyshawn, too, can be a really tough defender.
Yeah, I think when we break it down again, like post-All-Star break, he's probably second on the team in blocks. And that's something where I was even talking to him yesterday about where he's come, where he was playing this time at Miami and wasn't looked at and known as a defender. But he's really kind of adjusted. He's a guy at the beginning of the year was top five and leading the league in fouls, just was having a hard time staying in front of the ball, being physical. But when you watch him this last 20, 30 games, he's really adjusted, really learned the league, and he's a competitive guy, and he's an all-around basketball player. So we feel really comfortable putting the ball in his hands, letting him create, letting him score. But defensively, we've put him on a lot of different guys, especially since Bilal got injured, and he's kind of risen to the occasion.
And, Bob, with the most threes made by a rookie in franchise history, I mean, you have to be thrilled with the development there.
Yeah, happy with all three guys. I think Bob's showing that he was a mid-range player in high school and a mid-range player in college. He's still one of those guys that can get to that shot, and we want him to take them if they're open. But he's also expanded and worked on his game. I don't want to jinx it, but I'm pretty sure it's been a long time since there were two rookies that made 100 threes, and I'm not sure how many teams have had three rookies make 100 threes. And Alex, if he never got injured for that month period he missed, would already be there. But I assume he'd get pretty close by the end of the season. I think it's one, the work that those guys have put in with the coaches, but two, kind of the experience we're letting them have by trying differently to do different things and the way the game is going. But three rookies to get close to approaching making 100 threes, like, that's different and unique.
So what is the kind of like this last couple of weeks for you as the GM, and what can we expect from the team here the next couple of weeks? By the way, a couple of us, I think, are coming to the game on Thursday.
Correct.
And Cakes has vowed to actually interact with you this time.
He's I'm not going to have a
weird.
Uh-huh.
I'm not going to have a weird situation where I flee for the bathroom or try to leave the suite when you walk in. I'm going to stay there and like talk to you, and I'm going to try to approximate being a human being.
Hey, will you give him a scouting tip? Because a couple years ago, Cakes likes to claim that he discovered Bilal Coulibaly.
I would never be one to tell Will how to do his job. I mean, he's doing his
job. I don't know if that was a claim. I think he actually did. That's not a claim.
I think I may have. It's true.
I'm going to come back to you guys for the tips. I can't give you guys any tips.
Look, Will, ball knows ball, right?
I mean, very true, at any level.
I don't know if you've seen this guy Cooper Flagg, but he seems to be pretty good.
Well, I don't know.
There's a few guys still playing in this NCAA tournament that are having pretty good evenings, and a few of them had him last night as well. Yeah. So it's been a fun ride. This last month, you guys asked what I've been doing. I've been in Europe. I've been at these NCAA conference tournaments. I've been at some of these NCAA tournament games. So I've been traveling and moving. Our scouts have been moving. We actually have everybody in town just to be around the team right now, take team photos, but we've got to sit down and watch some of those games last night. So that's kind of the front office side. In terms of our team, we're trying to get healthy. We're banged up. We got a lot of guys, but we want to make sure that we're getting some momentum into the summer. And that's by playing the young guys and giving them opportunity. Last year, we stumbled upon a Tristan Vucevic at this time of year, a Justin Champagny, and gave those guys opportunities. And they took that into the summer and kind of really helped themselves. So we're going to keep playing our young guys, try to see what we have, try to get a little healthy, and finish the season on a good note.
Joined by Will Dawkins, Wizards GM. He's powered by Verizon. Curious, does Will Dawkins speak any other languages? You talk about traveling to Europe a lot. Are you fluent in anything besides English?
Fluent? No. I can get around in Spain very well. My Spanish from high school still kind of carries over there. I can like order a cab and food in a few other languages and say hello and be nice. But that's about it.
Which country?
You have to be learning some French. I mean, you got a lot of French influence on the roster, right?
Weirdly enough, my French is not great. I go there a ton. We have a lot on the roster. But Bilal's mom and myself, we've promised that we both have to get better. So she's working on her English while I'm working on my French.
Hey, Will, just
my wife speaks a little French, so she's like my buffer.
Just in the last calendar year, give me how many different countries outside of the U.S. you visited.
Oh, wow.
If you can pull it.
I would say at least in the last 12 months?
Yeah, last 12 months. Just off the top of your
head. At least 10 plus countries.
Oh, he's so well traveled.
My last trip alone, it was 6 days. I went to 5 different countries.
Jeez.
Where'd you go? Fill us in.
Yeah. Let us live vicariously through you.
That was a little bit of Greece, Spain, France. I think I was in Slovenia and Switzerland.
Your passport has so many stamps on it.
Weird story. I had once was over there, and my passport got so full, I didn't have a blank page. And entering Germany, I didn't know it was a rule. You have to have at least one blank page on your passport, and they almost didn't let me in.
Right. You're like, I got to go find the next Nowitzki. You got to let me in.
I was out there trying to watch the Wagners, I think, back then.
Oh, okay. Makes sense.
They're pretty good.
Yeah, pretty good. Pretty good family.
Hey, Will, is Bilal out for the year because of the hammy?
Yeah, I think the timing of that one's going to be really tough for him to come back. We've had some unfortunate injuries with him and Corey where, like, the timeline is that 4 to 6 week window.
Right.
And that's right around the season. So I would say unlikely, but he's progressing pretty well. So we'll never count him out. He's a different type of athlete, but more likely than not, yeah.
Hey, Will, especially with the international guys, during the summer, do you want those guys here, or are you cool with them just fanning out and training on their own? How do you approach that?
Yeah, I think it's important for everybody to get away for a little bit and just breathe because it's a long season. But in our jump season, what we try to call it, we make sure that guys are in D.C. for a good amount. So they'll be back training probably sometime in May, definitely in June, to make sure you're preparing for summer league and everything that goes into that, just preparation, and then whatever we do in July, and then kind of give them a break to kind of get away. But it is important that they go back, reconnect with their families and their friends, and do some stuff on their own. But even when they do that, we're there. So we'll send our coaches to wherever our guys are at, whether it's Corey in Arizona or whether it's Alex in France. Like, our coaches are going to go make sure they're still working with them. And that's our mental coaches as well as our performance coaches, as well as the on-court basketball coaches.
I don't know if you saw this. You probably did, but did you see how the Lakers lost last night? They blew a 5-point lead with 9 seconds to play.
Oh.
There was a Reggie Miller type vibe to that one a little bit.
That's true.
And I was around Josh Giddey a little bit in Oklahoma City, and I know he's a tough, competitive kid, so when I saw that shot go in, I knew he was going to take it. I'll say that.
That was crazy.
I think he loves playing the Lakers. I don't know if he's got something with Luka or whatever, but he's put up some big numbers in the last two matchups.
Oh, has he? Wow. Well, yeah.
The end of the season is pretty good for NBA basketball because a lot of teams are trying to achieve different things, and you see teams trying to position themselves, but also you see players trying to position themselves. So it's fun basketball to be watching at the end of the year with some different names stepping up. So league-wide, I find that it pretty interesting.
I got to say this, Will. I'm so ready for the playoffs. I want the regular season to end. I really do.
The West is going to be a bear. It's going to be fun for teams to go watch and just to see those play-in games. I think the league's got that part right, where competitive basketball is going to start here pretty soon. And I think we're on our way to figuring out and being part of that here.
Yeah.
Good to hear, Will.
All right.
Good man. Hopefully we'll see you on Thursday.
Sounds good.
Yep.
Have a good weekend, guys.
See you soon.
Thank you.
It's Will Dawkins, Wizards GM, powered by Verizon.
Brush up on my etiquette and my interpersonal skills.
I didn't respond to the email yet, so I better do that.
I think
I'm going to go, but he said plus one. I got to figure that out, and I got to make sure that, like last night, my wife worked. I got to make sure that that situation is covered.
Yeah.
Yep.
Anyway, Will Dawkins, powered by Verizon. He joined us on the Rude Guest Hotline. Rude's the most reliable heating and air conditioning products in the DMV. Coming up in an hour, we will be joined by Kevin McCarthy. Give us the latest on the movie. See if there's anything worth seeing this weekend. Keep it here. We're the Junkies on the Fan.